This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 75 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, long time no speak, considering tonight we're recording on our usual time. It's been a while since we've done that.
That's right. You know what else has been a while, David, is flying my quadcopter. The weather really isn't conducive in New England in the winter, so hopefully we'll get a break and I can get out there and do some more flying.
Ah, that's the advantage of my little one. I can bounce it off the walls inside the house, which I've done successfully.
Yeah, I bet. What are we looking at this episode?
Well, we've got some interesting topics, a lot of news. First of all, we'll start off with a feeder for a parrot. In the world of the U.S. Air Force unmanned systems, they have a huge manpower problem. Real estate and agriculture get FAA approval. ICAO rulings by 2018. Fines and more schooling. And a You're Grounded video of the week. So I guess we better get started. Well, our first news story is actually from our very first guest, Drone Girl. New charging pad for Parrot drone changes the way you charge your batteries. This is kind of unique. You're the engineer, you describe this.
Well, I can tell you what it looks like, but not exactly how it works, although I could guess, I suppose. This is the SkySense portable charging pad. And what this thing is it's what it sounds like. It's a pad that you can land your drone on, your multi-copter, or they say your VTOL aircraft, and it charges up the batteries. So you can position these things wherever you like, I guess, as long as they have a power. You plug the pad into an electrical outlet and land the drone on it, and it charges up the batteries.
It's a very interesting thing. What they're talking about is, and it sounds a little bit like it's geared for surveying or pipe checking out or... pipe checking out. There's a technical term for you folks.
Pipeline inspection. How's that?
Pipeline inspection. Thank you, Max. And it's going to be one of those nights, folks. And or precision agriculture, where you set up these pads around your crops, near the outlets by your crops, and the drone sort of hops between them to recharge and then continues on its mission. And it charges at the same rate as your usual charging cable. So it's really kind of an interesting way to extend the range of your UAV, not that you're supposed to be flying it beyond line of sight, according to the FAA, but in this case, you'd be able to program it and it would hop from pad to pad.
Yeah, for autonomous missions, this could be interesting. You could set up, like you say, David, sort of a base station at various locations where the charging could take place. Although, you know, these things are not terribly inexpensive, so I wouldn't leave one of these laying around. Now, according to the SkySense website, they come in three different sizes. There's an 18-inch wide pad, a 36-inch wide pad, and a 72-inch wide pad. Pricing is $649 for the 18-inch. $1,425 for the 36-inch and a whopping $4,365 for the 72-inch wide pad. So, like I say, you wouldn't want to leave these out or someone could walk off with them, I guess. But I understand, David, that these are actually not available at the moment, but will be soon?
Well, I think you can order them, and they're going to start shipping them in February. So anybody who gets one, let us know, because SkySense, this is interesting. And they have something even a little more thinking down the line of autonomous. They have the drone port, which is sort of a clamshell, remotely operated base that you store your pad in, and then your drone, so it charges and it's fully covered. And then at that point, the hatch opens up and your drone flies off and away we go.
Now, I'm guessing that this is something that's maybe still being designed, because the illustration, the graphic on their website is just that. It's a drawing, a conceptual kind of drawing, I think. It doesn't look to me like it's an actual photograph. So maybe this is something that's farther down the line. But yeah, interesting idea, a little protective enclosure for your drone as it charges itself out there and, well, wherever you place the pad.
As we were talking before the show, I said it does kind of make a neat scenario, especially for precision agriculture. You know, I've got 300 acres of my vineyard out in Northern California, and my drone gets programmed, and it takes off from its drone port, flies its mission for a couple of hours, lands at its other pad, recharges, and then flies back, and then returns back to the drone port, and all of that information gets downloaded to my computer. So by about 12 noon, I have a complete survey of my crops.
Yeah, fantastic. Now, this is a hypothetical, right, David?
This is a hypothetical.
Okay, when you talk about your crops.
Well, yeah, I haven't got the vineyard yet. But but yeah, definitely it's a really neat, it's kind of neat. It's another one of those, we like these things to get thought of out of the box, and this is another one. Now, if someone could actually give us detailed explanations on how it charges the drone, we really would appreciate it. But we know that that's probably proprietary, but we still are curious. You know, the engineer of the show was desperately trying to figure out how it works.
Yeah, I don't know if this is an induction charging device or something else. I'm not certain. But I do notice that SkySense has a newsletter that you can sign up for. So I guess that would bring you more information as it develops. And we'll have the link for SkySense in the show notes.
Okay. So let's go on from some really cool news to, I don't know what to think of this other than it's sort of depressing. And on Airplane Geeks, we talk a lot about the pilot shortage. Pilot shortage in air quotes, because there are people who say there won't be one. There's people that say there will be one. But evidently, the U.S. Air Force has got a real manpower issue for its UAVs. This story was from DiscoverMagazine.com. Lovesick Cyborg. The drone war pushes pilots to the breaking point.
Yeah, I guess, David, there's a couple of issues here. One is the availability of drone pilots, and the other is sort of the demeanor or the environment in which these pilots are working that's causing some degree of stress.
To start off with, what's right driving it is the Department of Defense has an April 15th date that it wants to fly 65 combat air patrols or CAP patrols a day, up from the current 61. Now, 65 patrols, when I first read that, I was like, okay, that's half a carrier air wing, right? Well, it's a lot more than when you start talking about in UAVs, you start talking about manpower issues. Okay, well, let's take you through one CAP. One CAP requires either four Predators or four Reapers. It's 24 hours worth of coverage. It's 10 men per drone per combat air patrol or CAP. However, the optimal is 40 people or 10 men per aircraft per CAP. Unfortunately, the Air Force is running at 8.1 men. That's substantially below the 8.5 bare minimum they say that are required for the missions. Add to that, and this was a quote from the article, the Air Force initially created the human crews like robots and expected them to work 12-hour shifts, 6 days a week, without fully briefing them on the purpose of their assigned missions. So we've got these guys stressed out beyond belief because they're trying to do the work of, you know, more with less. And the Air Force then is trying to think of the drone, the drone operators as drones.
Yeah. And yeah, that's kind of pushing it. But is that because the number of pilots available is insufficient for the demand? I mean, that's why they're pushing the pilots they do have so hard, I guess, right?
That's correct. They don't have enough pilots, and they're and it's a robbing Peter to pay Paul. We have so many active duty missions that we're removing the pilots that do the training for the new pilots to fly the active duty missions. So you're reducing the you're getting into a catch-22. You don't have enough new pilots, but you don't have enough people to train for the new pilots because you don't have enough new pilots.
You know, there's an interesting quote in here from Peter Singer from the Brookings Institute. And this is a kind of a we get no respect sort of a story, I guess. He illustrates how the mission that got the leader of Al-Qaeda in Iraq required a team of UAS folks, drone operators, and they tracked him, having devoted over 600 hours of mission operational work, he says, to pinpoint him. And so they point the laser target on the compound where he was. Then an F-16 pilot flies 6 minutes in there, facing no enemy fire, he says, drops a computer-guided bomb on the laser, and that's the end of this Al-Qaeda leader. But he says, who got the Distinguished Flying Cross? He says, the people who spent 600 hours or the six-minute pilot? I guess it wasn't the people who had spent 600 hours, David, and that's kind of what they're getting at in terms of the recognition and respect that they deserve.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not good. It's the Air Force has got a real issue on its hands, and it's trying to figure it out. We'll keep following up. They've got to do some things, especially if they're going to want to ramp up even more missions. So I highly recommend reading this article from Discovery because it pulls in a lot of different articles from various web sources. And it was a very, very fascinating read about something we don't talk too much about, which is the men and women behind the unmanned machines. So very good article. All right, well, it's time for that part of the show we like to call Regulations of the Week.
We got some more exemptions. Hooray!
I don't know about this. You know, I don't know if I can cheer exemptions anymore.
Well, we're up to what now? 14? Is that right?
We
had 12 before, and so the FAA granted two more exemptions on January 6th.
Yeah, and it's January, and we still don't have any small UAS regulations that were supposed to be out by the end of 2014. Did I mention it's 2015? all right, well, let's start off with Douglas Trudeau. With Terra Antigua Realty in Tucson, Arizona, got an exemption for his DJI Phantom 2 Plus Quad to, quote, enhance academic community awareness and augment real estate listing videos.
So this is interesting in that, you know, if you think back to the earlier exemptions that were given by the FAA, particularly the film industry, the film production companies, I mean, that was a group of them. It wasn't an entire industry, but it was a group of them. We've talked a lot about how real estate is one of the big areas that has opportunity for drone videos, for aerial videos from drones, let's say. But, you know, so here's one out of probably hundreds or thousands in the United States that would like to perform this service. We can't do this piecemeal, can we? I mean, this just, it seems kind of nuts.
It's getting painful. It just is. Well, let's talk about, let's have cheer for agribusiness. They got at least one flying. Advanced Aviation Solutions in Spokane, Washington, were given a exemption to fly their fixed-wing EB Ag to, quote, photographic measurements and to perform crop scouting for precision alcohol. Excuse me.
For precision photographing alcohol. Oh, man, we're going to have to start doing outtakes on this one.
To photographic measurements and to perform crop scouting for precision agriculture. So now these are exemptions. They're not COAs yet. And I thought that they really went hand in hand. I was sort of surprised about this part, or it might have been missing something, Max.
Yeah, I don't know. The FAA press release says that the COAs that are needed are to ensure that the airspace for their proposed operations are safe and that they have taken the proper steps to see and avoid other aircraft. And then the FAA says, in addition, the COAs will mandate flight rules and timely reporting of any accident or incidents. So, yeah, it's kind of a two-part thing, I guess. These two operators have the exemption, but it sounds like before they can actually start operations, commercial operations, they need to provide the additional detail, I guess, that is necessary for the COAs.
Tom, we'll follow up on these guys. Good luck. Congratulations. And we'll see. Maybe these are steps in the right direction. I don't know.
I think so. And maybe an indicator of that, David, is the fact that they don't need an airworthiness certificate. And the FAA says that's because they do not pose a threat to national airspace users or national security. So I guess that's good. Next up, we have some news from ICAO, the International Civil Aviation Organization. This is from AIN Online. ICAO panel will recommend first UAV standards in 2018.
So ICAO is got a new remotely piloted aircraft systems RPAS panel. And the panel's current focus is, quote, is on the development of standards and recommended practices, SARPs, I think we need to add that one to the list, for adoption by the Council of ICAO in 2018 related to airworthiness operations, including RPAS operator certification, and licensing for remote pilots. Leslie Carey, the program manager, was quoted as saying,
2018, I guess it isn't just the FAA that's going to take a bit of time to get the UAS regulations out there, or in this case, RPAS. ICAO is also taking quite a bit of time. But, you know, the issues are complicated here, David. And, of course, ICAO is looking at global standards.
Yeah. Integration, yeah.
So that's...
I mean, I can accept ICAO is going to take a while because they've got to, and they can't really go forward until the countries themselves have set up the standards so they can, I don't know, find best practices.
Yeah.
What I thought was kind of really interesting was that even though it's going to be 2018, which really isn't that far off, they're following it up very quickly with detect and avoid regulations to follow in 2020. So that's really moving ahead with the curve.
Yeah, but 2020, yeah, that sounds like so long a wait. And yeah, I just really wonder if the
universe is that patient.
Right, exactly, and because I think they're not, because the opportunities are just so great, and there are so many things that can be done both commercially and for social value. That yeah, you know, it's tough. Now, of course, all that sort of changes when you put it in the perspective of safety, and particularly things like manned aviation safety. I mean, if we start having collisions and such problems with manned aircraft, I guess I hope that's not the wake-up call that we need to illustrate just how important these regulations are. I just wish they could come together with more speed.
Yeah. So the next couple stories are from our listener, Peter. The first one was from the Montreal Gazette. Cameraman hit with $1,000 fine, Canadian, for filming with drone. The co-founder of a Canadian video and photography company that uses drones was fined by Transport Canada after a real estate shoot. He's fighting the fine, saying Transport Canada's rules on flying unmanned aerial aircraft are not clear. And Julian Gramena said, I'm not a pilot, I'm a cameraman. I never got any help from Transport Canada or an explanation of what I was or wasn't allowed to do. When you buy a drone, it doesn't say subject to the rules of Transport Canada on the box. is it reasonable? I don't know.
Yeah, I kind of wonder about this. Now, I'm actually an advocate of having that, you know, that piece of paper in the box that...
And we need to congratulate DJI because they made the announcement today that they are going to do the Know Before You Fly program in all of their new products.
Excellent. Excellent. That's very good.
And the so you know what? That's good for DJI. They're, you know, and in this case, you know what? He sounds like he knew what he was doing was wrong.
Yeah. I also think it's different with a commercial operation. If you are, you know, a enthusiast, a hobbyist, and you're flying your quadcopter for fun and your own personal enjoyment, that's so easy to do that I really like what DJI has done and try to bring some awareness to that crew. But if you are a business and you are undertaking a commercial operation, I would think that an aerial video business would want to do a little bit of research or would know enough to know that they have to ask some questions and make sure they understand what the limitations and requirements are before they undertake their commercial flights. So, you know, interestingly enough, this flight, this real estate shoot that he did was in June, and he didn't get the fine until December. So that's quite a kind of a long time lag there, but I don't know. Maybe Transport Canada hadn't caught wind of this until more recently and then decided to fine this guy. I don't know. But I tried to see if there was any new information on this, but nothing out there in the press. So hopefully Peter or our other Canadian listeners will help us stay current with this as it develops. Be interesting to follow.
Agreed. And the next story also was another Canadian story via Peter. This is from the Winnipeg Free Press. City man has high hopes for school for drone pilots.
Mm.
Buoyant Aircraft Systems, I kind of like that. Oh, excuse me. Buoyant Aircraft Systems International in Winnipeg wants to develop a flight school for UAV pilots.
I think
this
a lot
is
of
good.
It is good. I think a lot of people are anticipating. We've talked about this. I think anticipating that as the regulations develop here, there may be licensing or certification requirements for pilots, for UAV pilots, or at least for certain classes of UAVs or certain missions. And some people are thinking ahead and trying to say, "Well, okay, there's going to be a big demand for this kind of training. Let's get started developing it." I guess Buoyant is going to pitch this idea to Transport Canada. They have a UAV working group, and in April they're going to take it to them, see what they have to say, see if they'll approve this.
So we'll keep following it up. Peter, thank you for sending in those two stories. And the next one, I guess, is our video of the week, which follows on why we need schools.
yes.
It's one from our... It's one from our You Should Be Grounded video, and it's a Coast Guard MH-65B takes out a drone over the Pacific Ocean, and our favorite dronophobe, Rob, worries about aircraft flying into drones. Watching what happens to this quad under the downdraft of the H-65 is a bit entertaining, but... Clearly, when the helicopter approached, the drone operator needed to recover that drone.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the conditions under which this flying was taking place are kind of dicey, too. This is off the coast of California. Last August, there was a hurricane out there, a lot of heavy surf. And so, you know, what happens when you have that kind of situation? All the surfers come out, and the body surfers and boogie boarders and all these... people considerably younger than David and I who like to do crazy things get out there. And not only that, but there were apparently thousands of spectators watching the waves, watching the surfers. And of course, you know, you've got the quadcopters out there taking videos. But so that sounds like a kind of a dicey environment to be flying in the first place. But absolutely, David. And as soon as they saw a manned aircraft of any sort in the area, they should have landed those things, gotten them out of the way immediately. And they didn't do that. And I'm sure the helicopter couldn't see the quadcopters.
Yeah. So it's fly safe, folks. That's, I'll leave it at that. We all know what we should be doing and what we shouldn't be doing. And last but not least, some feedback. Huh, Max?
Nick Dragolia, or Dragolia. Nick, I'm sorry if I just butchered your name. He's from an outfit called Drones Den, and he caught us in episode 74, our Did You Get a Drone for Christmas episode, and he wrote an article a while ago on 50 uses for drones, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes, and it's quite an interesting collection of things. Some of these things are things that we all know about on the show, and you all listening are very, very familiar with things like, you know, take a drone selfie. There's other applications, disaster relief, search and rescue, air shows, journalism, things like that, agriculture. But there's also a couple of kind of interesting ones in there. The one I like, David, is walk your dog. He says with GPS and pre-programmable flight routes coming as standard nowadays, this could become a serious business opportunity. In a way, this would defeat the purpose of dog walking, but if you're pressured for time, why not? So I love these. You know, some of these may not be practical. Some of them may not seem to be, but, you know, if you reflect on them a little bit, why not? I think it's kind of clever.
So I guess with that, Max, where can people find us?
So, of course, you can find us at the UAVDigest.com. Since this has been episode 75, you can find the show notes directly by visiting us at the UAVDigest.com/75.
Twitter at UAVDigest. Follow us on Facebook.com/UAVDigest. And, of course, we always want to hear your feedback and send us your news stories so we can talk about them. And that's feedback@theuavdigest.com. If you love us, you should leave us some feedback on iTunes so that other people can find us, because no one really knows how the Apple algorithms work, but that seems to help us. You can get some swag at our Cafe Press store. And we've got another patron. We'd like to thank Tim for signing up. And if you'd like to help Max and I fund this little endeavor, you can go to patreon.com/theuavdigest, or go to the donate button on theuavdigest.com. And with that, Max, I think we should end this trouble-ridden recording.
Yes, we've had more than our fair share of internet troubles this recording session. So I think we've finally made it all the way through, David.
So with that, we'll see you next week. Safe flying. This is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.